Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. This is Ken McCusick, and welcome to another episode of Film Study. It's time for this week's One Last Thing with co-host Slava Cooperstein. Slava, how you doing?
No complaints, Ken. I know that you desperately wanted to do a podcast on whether or not Marlon Humphrey should have an Instagram account, but we just don't have enough time to cover that in depth the way that we would need to today.
So. Yeah, or the way Marlon would cover it. Marlon would cover it in great depth. But we are going to talk about some underperformers and some overperformers on this season. As always, we start with the bad news. Slava, how about talk to me, and we're each going to have one on each side of the ball, we agreed. But give me your underperformer on offense for the Ravens so far this year.
Yeah, I think the this one is very obvious, but it's obvious because it's just so stark relative to this person's performance over the last couple of years. And that would be Mark Andrews. You know, Mark Andrews certainly had an injury last year, sort of came back valiantly at the tail end of the season. And I think we all had pretty high expectations. Maybe not that he would be 100%, but he certainly looked, you know, a far cry from the productive go-to player that Lamar has always relied on.
Yeah, frustrating, obviously, the start to the season against Kansas City, lots of bracketing. They really took him out of that game plan, so I'm not too concerned about that one. He was okay versus Las Vegas, where he caught four or five balls, and then he disappeared again versus Dallas. Primarily, that was him not being on the field. He only played 25% of the snaps. But, you know, they had other blockers who were performing extremely well, which, by the way, is perhaps an underperformance element for Andrews, who'd been the team's best blocking tight end for a while. But Kolar had a good game blocking. And the guy who's been just forklifting opponents these last few weeks is Isaiah Likely. Look at any run to the right side, and you'll see Isaiah Likely just taking people off their feet. Which has really been impressive. So, yeah, frustrating for Andrews to start the year. And I know he probably wants to be out there. Obviously, didn't really matter this week, but it might matter next week. And he did have the most important target, arguably, the second most important target probably of this last game, which was on the three and out series, where he was targeted down the, I will say, the right seam area for about 10, 15 yards. And Lamar missed him, or they did not connect. Let's put it that way. And I'm sure it's been a very frustrating year so far for Mark, not getting the ball as much as he's used to.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder. Ryan Mink tweeted out today that Mark Andrews ranks seventh in the league in separation percentage, and something that you and I have talked about consistently is that Lamar really likes to see that separation before he pulls the trigger, sometimes to his detriment. But if that's, given that, you would think that Mark Andrews would be getting some more of these targets. But whether it's opportunity or game script or whatever, he just hasn't been the same productive guy or go-to guy that he's been in the past. I wouldn't write him off quite yet. I know a lot of people are ready to trade anybody and everybody at the drop of a hat. I think Andrews will will figure out his spot on this team this season, and will be an important part down the stretch.
Completely agree, by the way. If there's anybody who will figure it out, it's Mark Andrews. The next guy that I've got, I don't think he's going to figure it out, because I don't think it's on him. I think it's on Todd Monken and other people in the organization. But that's Deonte Hardy. He's expected by me, anyway, to be more than just a simple return man, but to provide something to the offense. You know, a group that has lost Odell Beckham, so there's some targets to be had there. They've over-relied on Nelson Aguilar last year, who had, you know, his a career year in a lot of ways with what, 35 out of 45 catches. Predicting 45 targets for Nelson Aguilar, I mean, I think I would have guessed the over-under was somewhere between 15 and 20 to start the year. And he just became a very significant part of the Ravens receiving game. Well, Hardy, I expected him to come in and really take some target share. I didn't expect any, you know, uptick from Tylan Wallace. And so there's some targets to be had out there. But the big ones are taking gadget plays away from Zay Flowers and let him operate down the field. And that was done very well in the second half of last year. The Ravens had Keaton Mitchell for a good portion of that. They, you know, relied on Justice Hill more down there. And we've seen Hardy have 5 total offensive snaps in 3 games. So I am looking ahead, and there's this long desert the Ravens have to go through before Keaton Mitchell's return. I don't know if that's 5 weeks or 10 weeks, or it might be not until the end of the regular season even. They need to have another option, in my opinion, as a gadget player during that time.
Yeah, they need to diversify the number, you know, the available targets that targets for players in the passing game, and also these gadget plays. And I think that those are important investments early on in the season, so they can pay dividends down the line when, you know, God forbid, you know, Hardy is playing a more pivotal role in the game due to injury or something like that. So, and it's almost a foregone conclusion, just given the nature of the NFL, the length of the season. This sort of goes back to how the Ravens seem to have overestimated the importance of the new kickoff return game.
Yep.
And so, you know, maybe that really drove their investment in Hardy, but if that's all they're going to use him for, really, the return on investment seems almost impossible to sort of realize. So it would behoove them to see what he could provide in the offensive game plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Very frustrating. And if it's not Hardy, it could be somebody else, because these guys are not expensive to find. I mean, there are plenty of vet men, guys who can provide some of the misdirection that a Hardy could provide and Zay Flowers they're relying on to provide right now. You could give the role to Tylan Wallace, perhaps. I don't think it's as dangerous a role, but Tylan Wallace could be a runner, and you could be happy that the injury risk associated with it was maybe a little less than it would be with Flowers. I think there are other ways to go, and they really need to figure it out. So we'll see. You know, another guy who could possibly be the guy is Chris Collier. Mm-hmm. So he's been, if he's going to come up and be the third offense, you know, a third guy, and he's only going to do that, I think, for 3 weeks of free activations. Get him in there on offense in a pony backfield for just a couple plays. Doesn't have to be for more than that, just a couple plays. And run him on jet motion and let him keep the ball once and see what he can do in the open field doing that. I think that'd be a very interesting thing to try. And if they're not going to try it with Hardy, I want to see him try it with somebody.
And worth showing it on the tape, if nothing else.
Yeah. All right, let's move over to the defense. So who's your underperformer on defense?
Yeah, so my underperformer on defense, I'm going to have to sort of heavily caveat this, but that's Roquan Smith. It's sort of funny to say 3 games in, a middle linebacker who's already, you know, gotten an interception, which is pretty impressive against Patrick Mahomes, to say that he's underperforming. I think there are a couple of reasons that he ends up on this list. First, the expectations for Roquan are sky high. They're commensurate with the large contract that he's playing on, with the level of play and the amount that he elevated the defense in years past. You know, we have high expectations and for him, and it's understandable why we do. The other thing that I think might be sort of playing into this is sort of Zach Orr, and I think we'll have this sort of as a common theme here a little bit, but Zach Orr, I think, is still figuring out exactly what he wants to do, how he wants to play certain coverages, how he wants to employ the pass rush. And it's very, very early days for Zach Orr. So I think that Roquan is one of the players who most has to compensate for a sort of coaching communication to players that maybe isn't completely a well-oiled machine just yet. And I think that that so much of that is on Roquan that his game is suffering a little bit because of it.
I'll give you another possible reason for Roquan's what I would consider a fairly minor decline. And like Andrews, I think he's going to figure it out and be right back. But if the comparable player is CJ Mosley in his last years with the Ravens, there's all kinds of crap going on there by people who frankly just don't understand football about how CJ Mosley was a terrible coverage player. CJ Mosley was a very good coverage linebacker. And, you know, in his very final play for the Ravens during the regular season, he, of course, intercepted the ball on 4th and 10 that put the Ravens in the playoffs against the Browns. But he had, he clearly had been a little bit hurt by the comments because he says maybe this will shut up some of the, I'm paraphrasing, some of the people talking about my coverage skills kind of thing. That wasn't the case. The case is when all the players around you are better, number one, in the secondary, you automatically become a target. So the Ravens, their weakness is between level two and level three in the middle of the field. That was exceptionally true with Patrick Queen there. Their areas of responsibility would overlap. So when you've got a Patrick Queen, and now when you've got a Trenton Simpson to a lesser degree, this is a problem for Simpson. The defensive coordinator wants to use him to rush the passer. And he knows, well, okay, Roquan is a C pass coverage guy or a C plus pass coverage guy, but my other guy is a D or D minus pass coverage guy. I've got to use him rushing the passer. And so I don't really believe that Simpson, by the way, is quite that bad, but Malik Harrison is. Malik Harrison is not up to the Absolutely. Coverage responsibilities of the position, and they had to find a role. So because Roquan is so versatile in terms of what he can do for you, rushing the passer, dropping to cover, run defense, you know, leading the defense to be in the proper gaps, play after play after play. I think he actually hurts himself by being forced into a role that is not good for him because it is worse for somebody else.
I totally agree. You're right about, in particular about Trenton Simpson. I mean, I think Roquan is a big part of why Trenton Simpson has looked as good as he has. And with Trenton Simpson sort of exceeding maybe the expectations and have made some splash plays that he has so far, you know, that just almost casts even more of a negative light on Roquan's play, which certainly hasn't been bad. It's just where, you know, our expectations are sky high. I think that as the defense continues to evolve and the players continue to learn, that we'll see the Roquan of old fairly shortly.
All right, fair enough. I'll move on and talk about Marcus Williams, who I think has been a disappointment to date. I don't think that a lot of people would disagree on this one. The Ravens really need him erasing some routes on the back end that probably showed up more than anything. Well, it showed up in the last minutes against Dallas in the final 10 minutes against Dallas, but also showed up in the second half against Las Vegas, where they really needed him to bracket Davante Adams or bracket Bowers and be in a position where they're taking away those players. And by the way, you don't have to take them away the same way every play. If you do that, it might not work. They might actually find the other receiver that can help them. You need to be willing to change that up. Some of that is on Zach Orr for not calling coverages in that way. But then I look at the Dallas game, and the touchdown with Tolbert is wide open to make it 28-18. That's Marcus Williams not being on his assignment correctly. So he needs to come back. He's another player I have really high expectations and probably belief also that he will come back and make good. But this is also a pivotal year for him. He has got to play well, or he's among the names the Ravens need to consider, along with Mark Andrews, along with Marlon Humphrey, which I think his name may be off the table at this point, for cuts for next year, because they are way short on cap and they need to figure out how to find money. They've got big signings coming up, potentially Kyle Hamilton at the end of this year. They have Linderbaum probably 1 year removed. They were in the same draft, but of course, because Kyle Linderbaum is the one that's going to be first. Tyler Linderbaum is going to be the one who's first because his fifth year option is not affordable. So Kyle Hamilton, they may wait on, but they have to anyway. They have money they've got to spend this offseason, and they're going to need to figure out how to fund that. And it's not going to be a pretty year for going to free agency, I can tell you that.
Yeah, you know, Marcus Williams is a little bit perplexing. I do think that this, again, sort of echoes some of the comments that we made about Roquan with Zach Orr and just the sort of players really that are in the spine of the defense are taxed by these growing pains more than, Owe's job largely remains unchanged, right? For example, and some of the guys along the defensive line. But I think there is an allowance for that. But even last year when Marcus Williams was injured and playing through injury for much of the year, you know, playing with one arm, he still made some really incredible instinctive pass defenses, right? I mean, he was, you know, it was unfortunate his run defense was left a lot to be desired because of that same injury. He kind of had to usher the players, the offense players off the field rather than tackling them. I think Zach Orr needs to figure out what he wants to do with Marcus Williams, but Marcus Williams also needs to execute at a higher level, sort of be instinctive. I think he's hesitating a lot because he's trying to avoid, I think, making the big error. And that, I think, on average, is lowering the quality of his play.
In the nature of a free safety, I much prefer the Ed Reed type free safety where you take risks and they pay off and you're a good gambler and they pay off more than they don't. But even if they're paying off just the amount that could be expected, it's oftentimes a good thing because defense needs variance. So needs variance. I cannot say that enough. I know I've said it a lot. I'm going to explain one more time what I mean. You need differentiation from average yardage values per play in order to get off the field on defense. And one way to do that is with turnovers. Another way to do it is timely incomplete passes. And that's what Marcus Williams needs to provide the Ravens. And they don't have another backup. They don't have another option at free safety that really makes any sense. Eddie Jackson, I believe, would be terrible there. Based on what I've seen so far, I don't think he's ready for, you know, a larger role. And I don't think that, you know, a player like people would say are Darius Washington or whatever. I don't think there's really another option. So he's got to come through for the team. And it's not often that the team has a true backup ready to go at free safety. The Ravens did happen to have that with Geno Stone last year and are very lucky. But most teams don't. And the Ravens need Marcus Williams to play well.
Couldn't agree more.
Okay. Let's go over the overperformers side. Start us off on the offensive side of the ball.
So on the offensive side of the ball, sorry, just one moment. I forgot which one I gave. Okay, yes. All right. Because you stole mine early on, so I need to make sure. No worries. It was sort of an obvious one. So on the offensive side of the ball, I picked the other obvious one, which is Justice Hill. Justice Hill on any other team would probably be the number one feel good story. Just a guy who has worked his way from being sort of a disappointment relative to the camp hype that he had generated, to not getting on the field very much, to sort of being just a occasional change of pace, back to really being a legitimate every down type, every situation type, at least above average in every aspect of a running back's game. And you know, I mean, you see a guy like his size doing battle with Chris Jones.
Yep.
I mean, just unreal pass blocking chops, and not just you know, not just the strength of his blocks, but he really positions himself really well, understands leverage really well. He's explosive. He can do one-on-one true pass blocking or, you know, chip and then go out and receive. He's I think, you know, running north-south better than he ever has this season. And really is an excellent complement to Derrick Henry. He is a legitimate part of this offense and has, I think, really earned his contract extension and just done a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I was excited to hear they extended him. And now he'll go on and he'll play at least 8 seasons for the Ravens as it looks right now. And that's you're getting up into very rarefied air when you get that. He's a survivor and, you know, they love him for special teams. They love him for that. He's been consistently the high.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Highest utilized set and chip blocker on the Ravens. He's in there on a lot of passing downs. He's done a lot of set blocking this year, which means he stays in and he's not just throwing himself into the ribs of a defensive end and going after a pass, which can be useful. All his metrics in terms of touching the football are fantastic. You know, he's got almost 7 yards per target, which is good for a running back, and had a couple of big downs on that first drive against Kansas City to reverse the tide of the illegal formation crusade that was going on against Ronnie Stanley at that point. Thank goodness, because that would have really looked bad for the NFL if the Ravens hadn't scored on that drive. And then he has ran the ball very effectively, 5.8 yards per carry so far on the season. Seems to be breakaway after breakaway. He was right there with Derrick Henry, taking advantage of a bad Dallas run defense, a porous run defense this last Sunday. So very excited. He brings the Ravens a lot on offense.
And now that the Ravens have rediscovered the screen pass post Ray Rice, yeah. You know, hopefully he can continue, you know, being that kind of outlet guy for Lamar, which would slow down, you know, the gauntlet of pass rushers that the Ravens are going to face this year, which we do every year with T.J. Watt Miles Garrett. And, you know, it's already been a murderer's row, and we, you know, have to figure out a way to stymie that. And he'll be a big part of that.
Yeah, I would love to get Patrick McCary on the show to talk to him about the incredible set of monsters he's had to face so far this year, and it's not going to get any easier if he's the guy who's in there. I guess that's enough about Hill. Let me move on to my guy. My overperformer is Ronnie Stanley, a fairly obvious one. What we've seen is tremendous mobility back for him. That's the biggest thing. Going into level 2, making blocks. He's still the smart guy who knows just how to disengage with his first block and make a second effectively to take 2 players out of a play. Oftentimes that'll be on the backside of some sort of a rollout going or run play going the other way. So the play goes right. He takes out 2 guys on the left is a not uncommon thing to see from Ronnie Stanley. I think it's possible the Ravens are actually regret shortening his deal. this is just incredible. We're at this point, but the Ravens did it with Michael Pierce and they regretted it and ended up re-signing him.
And that's a great problem, right?
It's great. Yeah. It's a great problem. Yeah. I mean, certainly we wouldn't want him to play poorly this year just because we shortened his deal. You wouldn't want that. But
exactly.
It'd be very interesting. The Ravens may try and re-sign him because it's going to be very difficult to replace a left tackle. And that will be the big question money-wise and why they need to make tough cuts this next year is that they're going to have to try and re-sign a player like Ronnie Stanley in addition to those big extensions on rookie deals that are coming up. But they have... they're going to have to make a decision on this. Another one is Adafi Owe. They're going to need to decide how to deal with him in terms of an extension. But Ronnie Stanley, if there's not a cheap way, and there's not a contract that's 3 years, $90 million out there for him, maybe it's 3 years for $55 million with the Ravens. I think I'd be excited about that right now. I think that's the level at which I'd say, yeah, let's do it. And you know what? I don't know how important this is to Ronnie, so I'm not going to speak for him because he might be able to make $10 million more somewhere else. And I think if it's any more than that, he's certainly going for the money. But Ronnie Stanley is very beloved in this community, and I would love for him to make the Ravens Ring of Honor. And then with that comes a host of future connections to the team that are really nice. And it's not worth $10 million probably. It's not worth $10 million of my dollars. If you have more money, maybe you feel differently about how to price that thing. But Ronnie has the quan here in town, as they put it in, what was the movie? Jerry Maguire, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So in this town, I'd really love to see him stay around. 3-year contract. He's in the Ravens Ring of Honor if he does that.
Absolutely, I would love to see. I would love it if they put a GPS on him. I want to see how much he runs relative to any offensive tackle in the league, because it looks like he's out there sprinting and just a monster, just looking for people to destroy. I mean, he almost like he wants to take all the bad juju that's come his way over the past couple of years and just redirect it outwards. I mean, he's playing with a intensity, a vengeance, a ferocity that, I couldn't have foreseen. I mean, even in my sort of wildest hopes, like I think that I would have hoped for, I wish he was, 85 to 90% the guy that he was. And I mean, he literally looks like he signed that, massive contract extension yesterday. Mm-hmm. And is just constantly involved in massive plays, just looking for work downfield. Really, really excellent to see.
Yeah, it's been unfortunate that he's been at the vortex of some of the really bad calls that have gone against the Ravens this year. So the 3 illegal formations, he got hit. Well, there were actually 4, 1 went to McCary and 3 to him. Complete garbage. The 1 offensive holding call, complete phantom play. It's actually really hard to score, but it's every one of his penalties was crap this year. Yeah. And I don't want to be a whiner about penalties, but the Ravens have got to start getting some equity in that area. And I don't know how they do it, but they are 32nd in the National Football League in net penalty yards. Some of that is their problem, but they're 51 yards behind number 31. 51 yep. yards behind number 31.
I mean, Andy Reid, after the game, he was saying, I'm really glad we didn't go first because I feel like they would have made, so it's not as if this is the, something that just, local Baltimore media is talking about. It's unfortunate that it is sort of really impacting how he may grade out and how people have viewed his game. But if you really look at like what he's doing on a per snap basis, I have no concern about Ronnie Stanley's game whatsoever, which is an amazing thing to get to say in 2024.
Yeah. Let's move over to the defense. Who's your guy?
My overperformer on defense is Kyle Van Noy. Kyle Van Noy had a great year last year, certainly. And I think that most of us sort of considered his results last year as sort of like the 80th percentile kind of result from what we could have expected to get from him, given his age, the fact that he was incorporated into the team, signed to the team, I think sometime around week 4 is when he started. And I think it was very fair to wonder, you know, what's he going to look like this year, another year older, and each additional year is considerable when you've been in the league as long as Kyle Van Noy has, and also what he would look like in the currently configured sort of outside linebacker room, given that Jadeveon Clowney is no longer with the team. So you're just wondering, is he going to be able to have even a similar level of impact? And he's been incredible. I mean, he has just gotten after it every single snap. You think, oh, fractured orbital, he'll be out at least 2 weeks. He's back the next week with a freaking broken face, just, you know, out there, you know, getting after it and making plays, and really just certainly exceeded my expectations. I thought that they were pinning way too many hopes on Kyle Van Noy, but he has delivered.
Yeah, he certainly has. I thought he would come back with that disco bondage mask thing that James McCann's had to wear, yeah. But that hasn't had to happen. So anyway, it's an easy choice. It really is. He's played great. I really got to give Chuck Smith a lot of credit because so many Ravens pass rushers are so dramatically improved over the course of the last 2 years in terms of what they're doing. Van Noy is having the best pass rush stretch of his career in his time with the Ravens. This is a complete outlier from the rest. He's been a decent pass rusher and been, he had 20 sacks for the previous four seasons before he came to Baltimore. But not like he's been now, obviously. So that's been very special. And he's got a bodacious spin move, which is not something you normally associate, well, necessarily anyway, with a Sam linebacker. That's usually a rush linebacker who really hones something like that and has it ready to go. And we've seen it from Oway too, with the interior guys, how they place their hands creates all sorts of problems and compression on the inside. But Chuck Smith has really been worth whatever money they've spent on him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember a time ever in Ravens history when we've had as many interior guys who are a problem. Yeah, I think, you know, for the longest time, it was sort of Nada could give you some pass rush chops, but he was really the only guy. The other guys would like be the Brandon Williams type, just a real like just run stuffing guy. And we've got not two, but three of them. And yep. It's creating a lot of problems for opposing offenses. But Kyle Van Noy is really getting it done for his part.
You'd have to go back. You have to go back a long time to find the Ravens with that kind of interior pass rush. And even in the years of like Adams and Siragusa, they really were de-emphasizing the use of interior linemen on passing downs. Adams would often be the one guy who was out there on third down, but Rob Burnett also would sometimes move in and play kind of a slant nose on third down. They really didn't depend on their interior pass rushers to do all that much, even for the 2000 Ravens. So it's a remarkable group right now, and we're enjoy it while it's here because it will not last.
Briefly, when Jernigan, right before he got his contract, yeah. I think that was the one kind of blip, and that didn't even, I don't think he really even came on right away. You know, that was probably the latter half of the season, and then he got his contract.
And then at that same time, they had Pernell McPhee on the inside too. And that was very dominant. Pernell McPhee completely underappreciated for what he did for that 2014 pass rush. But he was a special cat too. Let me move on. My guy on defense is Ardarius Washington. He just absolutely played fantastic against Dallas. He played extremely well in very limited duty previous to that. There's so much going on here in that Dallas game. You have a team that actually is blowing a lead while Washington is playing some fantastic football, and the Ravens are really benefiting from being in a dime package. So they did a fair amount of dime during the first half. They stopped some drives that way. They de-emphasized Trenton Simpson's role, got him into a role where he's been very effective, more focused and playing mostly first and second down. And then they went with Kyle Hamilton at the dime back, Ardarius Washington at slot corner, and Humphrey on the outside. Now, they could have moved Humphrey into slot, but Wiggins was playing really poorly. So Washington is really the guy. And I think, you know, Washington, I don't know what the guy has to do to win a permanent job. But if that game didn't do it, I don't know what will. He's now been targeted 9 times on the season for a total of 27 yards. He can fill in other spots. Maybe the versatility, you know, hurts him like it hurts Patrick McCary, say, on the offensive side. The only TD he gave up was that touchdown to Tolbert on that back shoulder throw. Very difficult to defend. I don't think any of the other Ravens corners would have been able to do it either. And, you know, right now, when Arthur Mollett comes back, I don't know that he has a job on this defense. I mean, what it really allows the Ravens to do is be very patient with Mollett's injury and kind of delay. And then they'll, at some point, they'll say, we're activating him. And I'm sure they'll have injuries at some point this season that they'll actually need him. But Ardarius Washington will give them the value to move back. One other thing about Ardarius I really need to say, I was very down on his ability to play the split safety role because of his tackling ability. The way he drove through the middle of the body of Ferguson this last week, huge tight end for Dallas, you know, a guy who weighs, you know, 245 or something, much 60 pounds more than Ardarius does, if not more. I no longer have that real fear. I think he could handle that spot from the tackling perspective. And I think already he's shown some instincts perspective to be in the right place at the right time.
So do you think that Ardarius is possibly threatening to take sort of a starting, you know, split safety role with Marcus Williams on one side and him on the other? Do you think that's something that might be in the works?
I think it could be. Eddie Jackson has not been super impressive so far, and I didn't really have high expectations for him coming into this season. I know PFF's got him for no targets. When you see that number posted, that's a intentionally low number by the way PFF does it. Is they give most targets that are between level 2 and 3 to the linebacker. So if you look at another site, they'll have a different target number, and it'll always be higher for safeties. So that's something to look for. And Eddie Jackson, I believe, looked the last 4 years, and PFF had him for, I think, 100 targets and basically almost exactly 1,000 yards. And PFR had him for like 144 targets and about it was a slightly more yards per target over that period. So it just gives you an idea. But you know, you could have a 40% difference in targets for a safety if you're doing that. Eddie, it's not like he's made zero plays on the year, but I'm not impressed with his per play productivity so far. So I think it's possible.
Yeah. And you don't have to have necessarily all of the traits that you would, certainly not the traits that you would want in your single high safety, right? In the split field role. So, you know, he definitely, Ardarius is sort of, I have not yet seen a play where he sort of looked lost out there or out of position. You know, he's a guy that, you know, maybe his size, some players can make a play on him. But again, if you're in that sort of split field role, you can sort of position yourself a lot better than you can if, for example, he's out on an island as an outside corner.
Yeah, he plays way bigger than he was. And you watch what he did to CD Lamb in this last game. It was very impressive in terms of, you know, basically stripping him top to bottom of one pass and just being in his hip pocket. Cooks, who had to pull him down basically using a horse collar tackle to avoid an interception. Great play, in position, ready to do it. All right, always fun doing this show with you, Slava. Did we want to talk through some honorable mentions or do you think we're good?
I'm always game, Ken. I mean, I think we could just briefly cover, you know, Kyle Hamilton is somebody that you and I both discussed could have possibly made the disappointing list. The reason that he didn't, I think, was largely because game 3 he looked every bit as dominant as he did for much last season. It just looks like he, you know, whatever was bothering him or preventing him from being as effective as he. As we would have expected him to be, was no longer an issue in game 3. When you only have three games to pick from, that's a pretty large part of the sample size. So I think that we're both satisfied that he's going to continue to be the Kyle Hamilton that we know.
And somebody like Marlon Humphrey, we didn't put him on the overperformers because he's had a great year. He's allowing about 4 yards per target, just slightly over. But and he's had a lot of targets too. So that's it's nice to when you're allowing that few yards per target, you want to have as many targets as possible. But expectations were so sky high for him from me watching him all summer. He was the Ravens' best player in camp. Looks like a guy who has years left. And when he's done it with corner, I think he'll move to safety and be very effective there. So I think he's played well. It's just he couldn't make the overperformer list when everybody's been playing so well in a relative sense, like Ronnie and KVN and some other people.
Yeah, I think if the last sort of data point that you had for Marlon was how last year went when he was. Uh-huh. Pretty, you know, marred by physical, injuries and setbacks, and just knowing how long he's been in the league, how many snaps he's logged, right? He's played a lot of football in the, 7 or so years that he's been in the league. So it would have been reasonable then to expect that this year maybe he wasn't going to quite be playing as well as he is now. But again, as you said, he went out and was, the star that we knew we hoped he could be in camp, and has just continued that that trajectory.
All right. Slava, so much a pleasure doing this show with you whenever we get the chance. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
I'm on Twitter at Slava Cooperstein. That's SlavaCooperstein.
All right. Other folks out there, I'd like to encourage you to use hashtag film study mailbag. If you have questions for Slava or me or topics you'd like to hear on One Last Thing. So we do a lot of underperformers, overperformers. It's kind of a macro look at how the team is performing a lot of times, maybe a particular scheme. But if you want to hear something else, let us know what that would be. You'd like to hear X or Y, send it to me in a DM, and I'd love to hear from you. I'm at Film Study Ravens, of course. For Ken McCusick, for Slava Cooperstein, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on One Last Thing.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.